from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
To Willard and Dibs.
I walked over here, supposedly it's a tough guy.
He just told a story. He just told a story that just said,
Ron, have you done that?
On 95.7 The Game.
That was Ronnie Lott talking about Alex Smith with you guys down at Dwight Clark's event a couple of months ago. That was an awesome moment.
It was a pretty sweet moment. You know, you do these things, and I've been doing it for darn near a quarter century, and you do these interviews, and, you know, when Ronnie Lott comes over, it's always special. And Ronnie is phenomenal. And, you know, he's talking about his pinky, how he cut off his pinky because it was so badly mangled and he wanted to keep playing. And
classic.
He's talking about Alex Smith and what he went through with,
oh my God,
like 27 surgeries and almost losing his leg. And you talk to these guys and it's like, you know, you don't really realize what they go through. And then you talk to Alex Smith about everything he went through. And then Steve Young sat down and you just remember all the concussions that he went through and suffered through. And, you know, guys not huge out there playing with these gigantic men, and it just kind of humbles you and reminds you of just everything that these players go through just to be out there, and reminds you about Brandon Ayuk. And, you know, he's fighting for every dollar, and I don't blame him for that because this game is so violent. And, you know, Alex Smith not only almost lost his leg, he could have died from that injury.
That's not an exaggeration.
Right. The infections were so bad that not only did it look like he was going to lose his leg, but, you know, he could have lost his life playing a game.
So. Which, you're right, puts kind of into perspective what Brandon Ayuk is fighting for with everything that has happened this offseason. I think it's so easy for us and for fans, and it's also natural when you understand why fans and why we do it. It's so easy to just write it off and say, 26 versus 28. Like, what difference is $2 million a year when you're making that much? But considering what these guys go through on a relatively regular basis, like just watching the receiver doc was wild. And you see every single week, just about every single week, even when Deebo Samuel is playing, Dibs, every single week, it's not just him getting treatment at the facility before and after practice, but he's got whether it was, you know, a team doctor or a team massage therapist or a team chiropractor or a team whatever, or if it's, you know, Debo's personal massage therapist at his home while he's just like hanging out on the couch watching highlights, watching SportsCenter to wind down for the evening, and he's got someone working on his body 24/7 just so he can have the ability to play another game on Sunday and then do it all over again the next week. And you keep doing that, you keep doing that, you keep doing that all the way until the Super Bowl, and then you suffer a heartbreaking defeat, and then you gear up and you try to do it all over again. So if that doesn't put it into perspective a little bit for what these players go through and why someone like Ayuk is fighting for everything that he possibly can, I'm not sure that anything could. But then you look at it from the team's perspective, and you can also understand what they're going through. And despite those two challenges, Dibs, it does feel like we have a little bit of a positive momentum between these two sides. And as someone on the YouTube chat put it a second ago, Andres, courtesy of First NorCal Credit Union, saying it. So it kind of sounds like now the Niners are at the goal line. The running joke has been the Steelers have been at the goal line. Maybe now there's increased momentum for the Niners, and now they're approaching the goal line, and they're bringing out the jumbo package to try to punch it into the end zone.
Well, they're the ones, ultimately, who have had the ball this entire time because they have Brandon Ayuk under team control for a fifth-year option, or they have the ability to extend him, and they also have the ability to trade him. So they really are the ones who have controlled this whole thing in all ways, because Brandon Ayuk can't be traded without them trading him. He can't sign with another team unless they trade him and allow him to go sign with another team. And Brandon Ayuk can't get an extension unless the 49ers offer him an extension. So they've been the ones with the ball this entire time. And even though, you know, our friend from Pittsburgh Radio, Andrew Filippone, saying that Pittsburgh's at the goal line, it looks like this is done. And yeah, he's getting that from the Pittsburgh side, and he could be right in many ways, but unless the 49ers decide to allow Pittsburgh to punch it in and get across the goal line, then all of this has just been nonsense.
Andrew Filippone has not tweeted in the last 5 hours.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, and I get that. He's probably tired of being the guy, the face of the Steelers are going to land him. Because it was a couple of weeks ago, I think, when he was saying, you know, Brandon Ayuk is on his way to being a Pittsburgh Steeler. It's all but done. And yeah, it turns out it's not all but done. And it's a lot more than all but done. And it's been kind of an ongoing, it's been a saga, really. And it's carried us through the latter part of July and the early part of August. And, you know, even the news today with Ian Rappaport saying Pittsburgh's got a deal, and then you get Mike Garofalo coming in and saying, well, the Niners look like might be inching close to keeping him. So just in one day, we've had both ends of the story with legitimate reporting going on of close to being traded, close to being re-signed.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to believe anymore.
Yeah. So let's let the audience hear both of those, actually. If you're just joining us, the Ayuk updates for the day. First, it came earlier this morning from Ian Rappaport of NFL Network. Here's what he had to say about Ayuk, the 49ers, and the Steelers.
Here's where it all stands, as things have gotten a little bit spicy. Sources say the Steelers and the 49ers have agreed to terms on a trade. They have agreed to compensation, and the Steelers are in a good place on Brandon Ayuk's contract. That does not mean the trade is done. Does not mean the trade is done. It simply means if the 49ers say yes, then it is done. That part has not happened yet, but the deal is in place. Meanwhile, the 49ers have made an offer for Brandon Ayuk to keep him there on a long-term extension. He has not accepted that yet. The fact that he has not accepted that yet means it is simply not enough, and the 49ers are not there yet. So there are now dual paths for the 49ers. There's the potential trade with the Steelers, then there's the potential contract extension with Brandon Ayuk. Neither thing is done. That is why we are in absolute limbo for Brandon Ayuk.
Okay, so that's Ian Rappaport of NFL Network. That was his report from earlier this morning. He then posted on his YouTube channel that clip of him breaking it all down, making it seem like potentially a trade to the Steelers was imminent, although hasn't happened yet, despite the fact that all angles of the trade had potentially been agreed upon. And then we got this update from Ian Rappaport's fellow NFL Network reporter, Mike Garofalo, who had this to say, spinning a little bit more positive note in favor of the 49ers.
This situation has been uncomfortable. It's been contentious. It's still a little bit of both of those as we sit here right now, at least between Brandon Ayuk and the 49ers. I'm going to try to inject a little bit of optimism here because you talked about that Instagram post the other night, Tom, where Ayuk said that there are two options. Let's just pick one, right? I dug into that a little bit, and what I've been told is that Brandon Ayuk would prefer to stay with the 49ers and has always preferred to stay with the 49ers, all things being equal. Now, they haven't been equal, but they did make that offer. In fact, both sides sent proposals within the last, I don't know, couple days, week or so, and the 49ers' number has gotten better than what it was previously. And they have, from my understanding, they have agreed on a lot of the main points of the deal. Their offers are in line, but it sounds like there's just one more thing that needs to be ironed out. And if that thing gets ironed out, Brandon Ayuk signs the deal. He stays with the 49ers. He drops the trade request. And finally, we can put this situation behind him. The Niners can put it behind him. Look, they did the fourth quarter comeback with Debo Samuel before when he had the trade request. This would be like, I don't know, like Montana to John Taylor. That kind of last second type comeback. But it can happen. It has happened before. Thank you. Trying to keep the theme going. Look, as you know, we've talked about leverage. The ball's in whose court. As far as Ayuk is concerned, it sounds like the ball in the 49ers court, and he's hoping that they can just make the final adjustment and get this thing done and stay with the Niners. We'll see.
Sure sounds to me like Brandon Ayuk's been using the Steelers to try to squeeze a couple more dollars out of the Niners, and it might be working.
Yeah, maybe, and we'll see where this ultimately ends up. But, you know, one more thing to be worked out is the way he portrayed it, and I don't know if that would be a guaranteed number, guaranteed at signing. I don't know what else it could possibly be. If you're looking at just one more thing to be worked out, it sounds like the bigger issues of a contract have been ironed out. If you're just down to the one more thing in a contract, that feels like the little thing as opposed to the big thing.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think maybe part of the reason why the 49ers are being maybe a little bit more open to meeting Brandon Ayuk's demands, might not be the right word, but what he's asking for in a contract, whether it is AAV, average annual value, or if it is a guarantee, total guarantee or guarantee at signing, or if it's, you know, I don't know, an extra year tacked on or whatever it might be for Brandon Ayuk. Part of the reason why the Niners might be willing to do this is because you are getting to a point, Dibs, where it is a little bit of a distraction, and Brian Baldinger was on earlier this morning with Bonte and Chasky on the morning roast, and he was talking both about Ayuk and Trent Williams, but I think this is more so about Ayuk. He was explaining how this is a major distraction and can impact a football team getting ready for a season. Here's Baldy with Bonte and Chasky.
For anybody to say this isn't a distraction is crazy. It is. It's all everybody's talking about with this team right now. It's those two players, not there. And they're great players. And the 49ers have rewarded great players. They just have, under the John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan regime, they've rewarded every great player. Ayuk is next up. Trent's like at the very end. He's like, okay, I just saw Penei Sewell. I just saw all these guys get rewarded this year. I'm way down the list right now. Let's just put me where I belong.
I mean, you heard it there from Baldy himself, who's been in NFL locker rooms for a lot and is still around the game now. No doubt that this is a major distraction, and maybe that's part of the reason why the 49ers, after all this drama, are finally willing to go back to the negotiating table and offer Brandon Ayuk a little bit more. Maybe not everything that he wanted, but be a little bit more open to potentially finding a common ground with Ayuk.
Could be, and I wonder where the number ultimately lies if this actually does get done, what the average annual value is and what the guaranteed at signing number will be, and if that is ultimately what Brandon Ayuk is looking for, because it feels like his ask back in March is different than what he was asking for now, although you've gotten a lot of reports that say they're just a couple of million a year apart in what Brandon wants and what the 49ers want to pay. Unfortunately, a couple million dollars could be a player, or it could be two players as you look into the future. And forget the Brock Purdy, because Brock's going to get whatever the market dictates that one of the top quarterbacks is going to get. And when he's up for an extension next year, assuming he doesn't totally fall flat on his face, and I can't imagine that he would, if he has just another good year, he is going to get $55 million or more per year. And so you've budgeted for that. It's really the lesser players that you have to worry about. You know, a guy who might make what Juwan Jennings is making, or Kyle Juszczyk, you know? If Brandon Ayuk gets a couple million more per year, that might ultimately cost you a player of that caliber, a guy who is in line to make $3 to $5 million a year, and well, you can't afford to pay that player $3 to $5 million, so you have to let him go.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also think there's, I mean, as I try to put myself in the situation, and what Baldy is talking about there is Ayuk's hold in being a distraction and potentially hurting the team, and maybe that's a motivating factor for the 49ers and for Shanahan to get this deal done. I mean, there were reports a couple of weeks ago now that Shanahan was getting frustrated by Brandon Ayuk, maybe frustrated enough that he's willing to trade him, maybe frustrated enough to where he encourages John Lynch and Parag Marathe to find, you know what, pay him a little bit more. Let's get this done. I'm so sick of this. Let's just get it done with. We need Ayuk back, and let's, you know, start from square one. Let's get this thing done with. Maybe that was where Shanahan's frustration ultimately shows itself. But if I'm trying to think about distractions, and I'm trying to put myself in the 49ers locker room, Dibs, and you brought up the name Kyle Juszczyk, and I think that's a good name to bring up, because Juszczyk is a guy who has been on this team for a long time, not sure how many more years in the NFL he has. Like, he's in a similar boat, say, as George Kittle, maybe not quite on the extreme of Trent Williams, but he's a veteran. He's no spring chicken anymore. He might sign one more contract. Who knows? Who knows how much longer he has in this league, how many more legitimate opportunities he has to win a Super Bowl. And the 49ers approached him this offseason, and he, maybe not super, actively and happily was willing to take a little bit of a pay cut, change around his pay structure a bit to help the team fit more into the salary cap, and just all those creative moves. Juszczyk ultimately ended up doing that. If you're Kyle Juszczyk, you do that. Everything that you've been through, so close to winning multiple Super Bowls, so close in so many NFC Championship games, and then you see Brandon Ayuk holding in on the sideline, walking around in a tracksuit at training camp practice, and he and the team are unwilling to budge either of their offers. I could see how, from Kyle Juszczyk's perspective, or someone like Kyle Juszczyk, could be a little bit frustrated by that, and how it could maybe get to you a little bit. And while outwardly, of course, when he addresses the media, he's going to say all the right things, and everyone has said the right things. We support him. He's trying to get his money. We've all been through it. But I would imagine it's kind of human nature to, maybe behind the scenes, or maybe when you're talking with a fellow veteran on the roster who shares your similar feelings, that some legitimate frustration comes out and you might be holding it against the player and the team. And that's not healthy for a roster, for a locker room that's trying to go out and win a Super Bowl. I wouldn't be shocked if something like that is not necessarily bubbling up, but that feeling does exist within that locker room.
Yeah, and that's natural. And you mentioned Kyle Juszczyk, and I think that it's human nature when you're a guy who just took a pay cut and you took
No doubt.
Begrudgingly, and you've got Trent Williams who's holding out for more, and Christian McCaffrey held out and got more almost instantly, and now Brandon Ayuk is holding in, and you're out there busting your hump at practice and through camp and doing everything that you're supposed to do to get ready, and you know that Brandon Ayuk is a critical piece for your team as you look to go out and do big things, and you go out and look to be the same team that you were last year, and you look to be even a little bit better than the team you were last year, and you want to win the Super Bowl, and you know that he gives you the best chance to be a Super Bowl team again, and yet he's holding in for more, and you took less. I'm sure there is some feeling deep down of maybe resentment's too strong, but you just want everybody on board, and you want everybody to be sold out to go out there and give you the best chance to win.
Like, I try to liken it to experiences that, like, you and I have had in our lives, or any of the listeners have had. Like, you're at a job, right? You're at work, and not necessarily your current job, but, you know, you're working a number of jobs in your life, and you're busting your tail, right? Like, you're giving it everything that you got. And then you look over to your left and you see Joe Schmo, who's kind of slacking off on the job, not holding up their end of the bargain. And you're kind of being lumped in. Well, the job's not getting done, and your boss is a little upset at you, and not everyone's buying in. But you look at yourself and, well, I'm being totally bought in. I'm doing everything that I possibly can. It's this other guy, Joe Schmo, who's not getting the work done. You kind of naturally develop I don't know, a little bit of animosity towards that person because they're not holding up their end of the bargain. But I'm doing everything that I possibly can. As you said, it's natural. It's human to feel like that. And so I personally would be a little bit surprised if there wasn't a feeling like that bubbling up in the 49ers locker room. And if that was something that was happening and Kyle Shanahan was aware of it, that might be enough to make the 49ers willing to offer just a little bit more. And maybe it also is enough for Ayuk to be a little bit more lenient with his ask, because it's not just upset at the company or the boss or whoever your leader is, but it's also potentially enough to be frustrated at whichever person isn't maybe holding up their end of the bargain, and maybe there's a little bit of equal pressure on both sides from people in that locker room to make sure that they get something done.
Yes, but at the same time, you don't ever want to count someone else's pocket, so that's part of it, and you want to make sure that you're not worried about Brandon Ayuk's money. You want Brandon Ayuk in camp and you want him ready to go for the start of the season, but at the same time you are respectful of the fact that this is how negotiations go sometimes, and he's got to go out there and try to get every dollar he can, and that's what every player does on their own. So it's a little bit of a mixed emotions, because you want him in camp, yet you understand why he's not, but you want him to hurry up and resolve this so he can get in, but you also understand that sometimes these things drag out. Last year Nick Bosa didn't sign until week one of the regular year, so you probably just try to put your head down and worry about getting yourself ready for the opener in, 27 days from now?
Yep.
That's the focus, but
Monday night
at the same time, you do have an eye toward what else is going on around you.
Yeah. And you also have an eye on how good can the team be without Brandon Ayuk, because that's what you're staring down. You're figuring out, is Ayuk worth the extra couple million dollars a year and the extra however many guaranteed total over the life of the contract, is he worth that, or can I survive without him? I think you and I are both in agreement that the 49ers Super Bowl chances take a major hit if Ayuk isn't on this roster, almost no matter who they get back. And Brian Baldinger was on the Morning Roast earlier today, and he agrees. Baldy, how replaceable is Brandon Ayuk?
You lose Brandon Ayuk, okay. You're going to put Danny Gray out there? Like, what are you putting out, Juwan Jennings? What are you putting out there? Nobody. There's nobody they're going to get that can run a route like Brandon Ayuk. There's probably nobody they're going to get that blocks like he does. They don't beat Detroit without that catch down the middle of the field. They simply don't make that comeback. That triggered the whole thing, that catch off the safety in that play. There's a reason why he's holding out. He thinks he's a pure number one, and he is. He's a real number one wide receiver. And they love to attack the middle of the field. That's their offense. That's where the ball wants to go. And if you're going to attack the middle of the field, you better have some fearless players. Not everybody is as fearless as Debo and Ayuk going across the middle.
And Baldy asked a very simple question. If Ayuk's gone, who's replacing him on this roster right now?
Ronnie Bell? I mean, that's what he said, but you would hope it's Richard
Danny
Pearsall.
Gray, too?
Yeah, Danny Gray is what I think he said.
Danny
actually.
Gray and Ronnie Bell might not even make the team.
Right.
Maybe not.
Get into Conley and Jennings and Trent Taylor, and these are all players who can help you further down the depth chart, but none of them are Brandon Ayuk, and Baldy even said it. He is a number one receiver, and he is probably your number one receiver, although your offense does not revolve around just one weapon. This is not CeeDee Lamb in Dallas. This is not Justin Jefferson in Minnesota. And if you look at the targets last year, they almost were equally distributed between the big four: Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Debo Samuel, and Brandon Ayuk. So you don't really have a true one in this offense, but Baldy's right. This team loves to run over the middle of the field, crossing routes, over routes, balls down the seam. Kittle can do it. Debo to an extent, although he's much better on the perimeter of your offense. McCaffrey out of the backfield, he'll get down the middle sometimes, but it's Brandon Ayuk. You run, he beats man coverage off the line of scrimmage. He gets inside, boom, and he is able to get that in man-to-man. And against zone defenses, he has a knack, as we were playing the Greg Cosell sound from last week, his ability to decipher zones and know where to go and sit down and get open in the middle of the field is second to none in this offense.
I think you're right. I mean, he can do both. I think where Ayuk's value is maybe most important to the 49ers, it is what you said earlier, that he can beat man defense. And the 49ers, for as good as their offense is, they don't have a ton of just straight-up man beaters. Like they don't. Like, you have Brandon Ayuk, who can run a route and get open against man-to-man defense. Everyone else is kind of... That's not their strong suit. Deebo Samuel is able to find those spots between zones, and once you get the ball in his hand, then he's very dangerous. But if you man up Deebo, you know, he's not the best route runner, and he's not going to be able to get open as much that way. Brandon Ayuk, on the other hand, consistently beats man coverage and can get open that way. And if you are a Niners offense suddenly that is without that threat of beating man defense, I don't care how good of a play caller Kyle Shanahan is, you don't have a single guy out there that can consistently beat man defense. It makes it a lot easier for defenses to defend you. And again, I don't care how good of a play caller Kyle Shanahan is. That's a really big challenge to figure that out when you don't have just simple, my guy's better than your guy, let's go out and get the job done. That's what IU gives this offense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And without him, I think the offense would take a relatively large hit. Doesn't mean they're going to be a bad offense. They were the best offense in the league last year, or one of them. It's not like they'll be a less than league average offense, but they're not going to be averaging 30 points a game, I don't think, if they get rid of Brandon Ayuk and don't get at least something back in return.
And it hurts the productivity of everyone else. And, you know, if you're a defense and you're facing the Niners without Brandon Ayuk, you just, okay, we're gonna bracket George Kittle. We're going to make sure we have safety help over the top if Kittle's going to be running down the field. And for Deebo Samuel, you're just going to play him a little bit soft. You're going to let him catch the ball and then rally up and tackle him, because Debo's not a huge threat to beat you over the top. McCaffrey out of the backfield is always going to draw attention. And then whoever else starts opposite of Deebo, if it's Juwan Jennings or, you know, Chris Conley or whoever else that is, you're not feeling as threatened by them. And you figure you can, you know, shade them to one side, take away the middle of the field, and then now you're making Brock Purdy beat you outside the numbers, which when you have Brandon Ayuk, you don't have that ability, because Ayuk can get off the line of scrimmage and beat you to the inside in man coverage, and he can get down into the middle of the field, which is threatening to a defense.
I think the other thing that popped into my mind, and it was when Steiny was talking about it. Steiny talking about how maybe the Niners would be open to moving off of Ayuk now because it gives them more information about Brock Purdy before they have to pay him, which I totally disagree with, because you'd want to put the best team out there as you possibly could this season, which is a hugely important season. But he kind of got my mind running, and part of me wonders if every individual's thought about how this Ayuk thing plays out factors into your belief in Brock Purdy. And it's easy to come out and say, you know, I believe in Brock. He was an MVP finalist. You know, if it wasn't for that game on Christmas Day when he went head-to-head against the other MVP finalists and he got dominated, he very well could have been the NFL MVP for the 2023 season. But I wonder, Dibs, if there's any correlation between Niner fans who feel like Brandon Ayuk is needed and you absolutely need Brandon Ayuk, along with the group of Niner fans who are maybe a little bit uncertain about Brock Purdy as the team's quarterback going forward. Because if you are so certain that Brock Purdy is a great quarterback in this league, you should probably be relatively confident that this offense will be fine without Brandon Ayuk, because Brock Purdy's so darn good. You still got McCaffrey, you still got Deebo, you still got Kittle. That's more than enough to get the job done. Purdy is so good, he can live without one of those weapons. Maybe there's a little bit of an overlap there between those two trains of thought, and maybe part of it, not saying that the Niners doubt Brock Purdy at all, but if they're so set on keeping Brandon Ayuk, and if the numbers come out and this deal gets done and the Niners end up paying Ayuk $28 million and a vast majority of it guaranteed, maybe it's a signal that the Niners feel like they need all the talent they could possibly have around Brock Purdy, because they're uncertain that he's going to be able to carry an offense by himself.
I don't think that those things are interrelated, and I would imagine that Kyle Shanahan already has a good idea of Brock Purdy's ability beyond whoever else he's throwing to, whoever else he has out there. The things that Brock Purdy's able to do belie the talent around him. His judgment, his decision-making, his processing ability. He can make all the throws, and you saw his elbow come back and his arm look stronger than ever. His leadership, all the other intangibles that he has that he has outside of who he's throwing to. I think those things are more important to Kyle Shanahan than the surrounding cast. So I look at Brock Purdy last year in particular, and I see that he had a very talented team around him. He has an unbelievable play caller, a great offense, and a situation where, you know, a lot of times they had the lead and they were able to dictate to opposing defenses. You didn't have to rally up and come from behind. The one time he did in the playoffs against Green Bay, he did it. And we should keep that in mind where they got the ball back with 6 minutes to go and a touchdown is the only thing that would do. And he led him on a touchdown. And yes, he has talented people around him and that's always going to be held against him until he doesn't. But I would imagine that Kyle Shanahan, when looking at is he or isn't he, should we pay Brock or shouldn't we pay Brock? He looks at Brock Purdy and his ability more than he looks at the surrounding cast.
Yeah, but okay, so, and this is an unfair comparison, but like, to look at what the Chiefs did with Patrick Mahomes, and obviously Patrick Mahomes is one of one, he's Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs felt entirely confident in their ability to compete and still win without an elite wide receiver in Tyreek Hill. And they don't have the kind of weapons around Mahomes like the Niners still would have around Purdy, even without Brandon Ayuk. So they moved on from Tyreek Hill. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think all they got back in return was future draft picks, right?
Which they used on pieces that helped them win the Super Bowl.
True. But there was, you know, the belief that we don't need this star receiver next to our star quarterback. And again, this, I'm saying it mostly tongue-in-cheek because no one is on the level of Patrick Mahomes besides Patrick Mahomes. But if there was, I guess I'll just put it this way. If the 49ers were of the belief that Brock Purdy was as good as Patrick Mahomes, you might be a little more willing to trade away Brandon Ayuk for just future help because you feel like he's good enough to carry the offense by himself. The reality is, while Brock Purdy can still be a very, very, very good quarterback, it's pretty clear that he's not as good as Patrick Mahomes, and that's why the 49ers are trying everything they possibly can to keep this offense as good around him, at least for this one coming season.
Right,
because
they
know that that helps their chances to win a Super Bowl.
And they don't have to make that decision just yet, and so that becomes interesting next offseason. If Brandon Ayuk does sign an extension, and let's say it's $27 million a year, whatever that number is, well, this year, his cap hit goes down from 14.1. One, and the 27 would kick in next year. So you go through this season, you either win the Super Bowl or you don't, you make the playoffs or you don't. Whatever happens, you get to the end of the year, you've had another year of information on Brock Purdy and Deebo Samuel and everybody else on your team, and you get to the end of next year, and then you've got some decisions to make. You can cut Deebo Samuel at the end of the year, and the cap hit's about $14 million. I think I may have the numbers slightly wrong, but there is a dead cap hit that you could absorb if you don't want to pay two wide receivers that kind of big money. Maybe you go through this year with an extended Ayuk, which hasn't kicked in yet, and Deebo making more than 25, and you win the Super Bowl. And then you've got a different decision to make because then you want to reward your guys and keep your guys together and all the rest of it. But I look at what Green Bay has done in particular, and you mentioned Kansas City, and they traded Mahomes, and they got back...
Tyreek.
I'm sorry, they traded Tyreek. I appreciate that. Trent McDuffie with the number 21 pick, and he has been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Sky Moore, he's been good. He hasn't been... He's stupendous. Good enough. He, you know, won a Super Bowl, and they got Kadarius Toney, who turned out to not really be that great, but... That's what you got back for Tyreek Hill. You got three picks back. And so if you get into a situation, maybe it's next year where you have Brandon Ayuk and you extend him, you can trade him then. You're allowed to do that. And I think you look at your two receivers you drafted this year and you get information on them. If Jacob Cowing is able to get healthy and play, if Ricky Pearsall gets healthy and he can play, then you can see at the end of this year what exactly you have if you want to go the cheap wide receiver route.
Yeah.
You can then do that. But I think for a year, it makes less sense to do that now because your quarterback is still on the rookie deal. You don't have to do that now. You're not under any financial pressure right now to make a decision on Deebo or on Brandon Ayuk.
And that's a very good point, and it's why this throughout this entire process, even when it seemed so clear that a deal was about to be made between the Niners and the Steelers, and there was that that portion, was it 2 weeks ago now? Was it early last week when every single national reporter out there was saying that, oh, the deal is as close to being done as possible. It's basically going to happen. Just waiting on the final details. But because of exactly what you just laid out, it never seemed like it ever made any sense to me. I'd ask everyone I came across, why would the 49ers ever trade Brandon Ayuk now ahead of this season when they don't have to? And no one could ever come up with a good enough answer. And it's why throughout everything, I thought that he would stay. And ultimately, I could be proven wrong. It hasn't happened yet that right. He signed an extension. We don't know for sure one way or the other. It does seem, at least in my opinion, more likely that that does happen than it doesn't. But you're right. The ultimate decision will come like 8 months from now when the 49ers enter another offseason, when they enter the offseason where they have to pay Brock Purdy, they enter the offseason where maybe they have to decide between Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, and maybe they enter the offseason where they have to decide to keep Mooney Ward and or keep D'Amador Lenore. There'll be a number of decisions coming up, but none of those decisions have to be made just yet.
And even the Brock Purdy extension won't kick in, and that's something that we all forget a lot of times because at the end of this next year, they have a chance to extend him, but that money doesn't kick in until after his fourth year. He's got a four-year contract, so they sign him for $60 million a year. Well, next year, in that fourth year, his number goes up a little bit, but it doesn't go up that much to where you can't still keep Ayuk and Deebo if you want. The question roster-wise comes down to guys like Mooney Ward and, you know, Dre Greenlaw, if he comes back healthy, I think his contract is up, and D'Amador Lenore and other pieces of your team. If your team is good again, we know how it went this year. You were good, and people had their hand out, and Trent wants more, and Christian wants more, and so many players want to get their piece of the pie, and that's where it will become a bit more of a crunch with Deebo and Ayuk if they're both making north of 25.
Yeah. Mooney Ward has already said multiple times this offseason, I'm trying to get another bag.
Exactly.
And D'Amador Lenore is entering his Brandon Ayuk year, where he's entering the final year of his rookie deal. And the Niners, I'm sure they want to keep him around. He's been really good.
And Mooney Ward's been amazing.
Mooney Ward, their best defensive back, bar none, for a couple of years now.
So
D'Amador Lenore, probably their second best defensive back. I mean, you could throw in Hufanga, second best corner for sure.
Yep. Well, and Hufanga missed, you know, the majority of the year last year, and now you've got a guy who might be primed to be his replacement or at least play alongside of him, depending on how Hufanga comes back from his injury. So the better your roster, the more you have these roster crunches with money, but that is so much better than the alternative, which is the roster that Kyle Shanahan inherited when he took the team over 7 years ago. You go back and look at that roster.
Oh my God.
And tell me you'd rather have this problem than that problem.
The worst in the NFL.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
By a mile.
Yep.
Inherited that mess from Chip Kelly and company.
Yeah, 2-14.
Oh,
the Chipper
God.
With his smoothies, serving smoothies to the fellas. And they were bad. The roster was bad, and the team was bad. And so he had a lot of work to do to make this one of the best rosters, if not the best roster in football.
I think, did they win the first game that year? First year of Chip Kelly.
That sounds about
right.
The
only year of Chip Kelly. I'm pretty sure they won, like, the opening game. Let me double check this. 2016 San Francisco 49ers. Yeah, they won week one against the Rams. 28-0.
Big.
And then they lost. Oh, no. Then they lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 games in a row.
Didn't they beat the Rams twice that year?
You're right, they did.
Okay, that's the part of it that sticks out. 2-0 against the Rams.
0-14 against everybody else.
Man.
My God. That team was terrible.
Yep, 2016.
Do you know where Chip Kelly is now, by the way?
No clue.
They used to be the head coach of the UCLA Bruins for a while.
Yeah.
He is in the same conference as the Bruins, just not with the Bruins. He's now the offensive coordinator for Ohio State.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, how about that? Wow. No longer a head coach.
Landing on
offensive
his feet.
Coordinator for Ohio State. Ohio State.
Same conference. I'm having a hard time with that.
I think in the AP poll that was released yesterday, Ohio State ranked 2? I think Ohio State ranked 2 in the AP poll. Georgia 1, Ohio State 2.
Your Ducks are 3, I saw, right?
Oregon 3.
Okay.
Oh, no, Texas might be. Texas is 4? Oregon 3, sure. Texas 4, Bama 5.
I'm just starting to warm up to college football, and I am having a hard time with the whole conference realignment.
I'm so excited.
It just doesn't feel, it feels wrong to me, and I know I have to get over it, and it, eventually it will feel more normal, but UCLA and the Big Ten, I'm struggling with it, Mark.
UCLA, Oregon, Washington, and USC all in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
You got Stanford and Cal in the ACC. You now have Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC. You've got the Arizona schools, the Mountain schools in the Big 12.
In the Big 12, okay.
Yeah.
It's a good refresher. I needed that.
Yeah.
So Utah and Colorado are in the Big 12.
Along with the Arizona schools, too.
Which, that makes a lot more sense.
It makes a little bit more sense. It makes certainly makes more sense than Stanford and Cal in the ACC.
No doubt.
They're in the same conference as Clemson and Florida State. It makes absolutely no sense. But yeah, I'm looking forward to all football, including college football. All right, time for a break here on Willard and Dibbs. We've got one more segment to get to. We could talk a little bit about the Giants on the other side to close out the day. Tough loss yesterday. Another big game coming up today against the Atlanta Braves down at Oracle Park. That's coming up on the other side as we continue. We're sponsored by Safeway. We'll wrap up this Tuesday coming up next on 95.7 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs.
What is your favorite or the best play on words using your last name that you've heard?
That ball got Schmidt on.
Oh!
on 95.7 The Game.
Well, there were zero baseballs that got Schmidt on last night, Dibs.
Good call, yeah.
1-0 in 10 innings was the final score in favor of the Atlanta Braves over the San Francisco Giants. The pitching matchup of Chris Sale versus Blake Snell, it was much better than expected. Giants couldn't push across a run. They'll try to even up the series today. Kyle Harrison on the bump, maybe the biggest start of his young career. We'll see if the Giants can squeak out a win against the Braves. But to really quick go back to what we were talking about before we went to break, Dibs, yeah, the Oregon Ducks no longer in the same conference as Cal and Stanford, which is frustrating for me because every year they would come down and play a game in the Bay Area and I'd get to go and see without having to travel that far. But I got to keep going to an Oregon game at least once a year, so I've decided to take advantage and just go all out. I'll be in the Big House come November to watch Oregon and Michigan.
Good for you.
In Michigan.
Have you been to Ann Arbor?
I have not been to Ann Arbor.
You're going to love it. Wonderful, wonderful college town. Sitting about 45 minutes outside of Detroit.
Yeah, I'm going to fly into Detroit.
Yep.
And then it's work my way over.
About 45 minutes and... you know, you go downtown and it feels, I don't know if you've been to Davis,
yes,
but it's kind of like a double Davis or, you know, the Davis part of the downtown that's not by the campus.
Yeah.
It's just Ann Arbor itself, neat downtown, lovely shops and bars, a ton of college kids. And then I never went to a game in the Big House, but I went when it was open and it's just kind of an awe-inspiring deal where you look up and it's like 120 rows with like no suites
so
in the middle,
excited.
No sections really. It's just like
old school
bowl with benches. Yeah,
yep.
Old school bowl, pretty fun.
Yeah, November 4th, I think the first weekend of November. Oregon
and, just looking
and
at
Michigan
it, right here,
in Ann Arbor.
November 2nd.
Time
TBD. And man,
might be a game day game. Who knows? Maybe game day is going to
be now.
There.
It's number 3 versus number 9. And you host the Buckeyes October 12th.
I know. I was thinking either I go to Eugene to see Ohio State or go to Michigan to see Michigan. I have some Oregon friends of mine who are on the East Coast. We figured it would be better just to meet in the middle of the country in Michigan and do it that way. So I'm looking forward to that. But
You've got a trip to Camp Randall, too, Wisconsin, November 16th. But that's a little bit more of an aggressive trip where it could be 31 degrees with 27 mile an hour winds. That could be a cold one. I mean, Michigan won't be warm November 2nd.
It would be kind of cool to experience like a snow game in Michigan too, if that were to happen. And November 2nd, very possible. Maybe not the likeliest thing, but certainly could happen November 2nd.
Yeah, good
Michigan.
For you though. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it will be a lot of fun. But we got more important football to talk about here on 95.7 The Game. Well, we got some callers that we want to sneak in before we get on out of here. 888-957-9570. Up next is Jack in Berkeley. What's up, Jack? You're on Willard and Nibs on 95.7 The Game. How you doing?
Hey, fellas. I'm doing well. I would like to also quickly say, been way too nervous to call in and say this for a long time, but I, long-time listener, I actually coached high school football with a former cohort of at least a few of yours, I would assume Dibley maybe, Henry Wolford over in the East Bay. His two kids were a great time. I think he's incredible, and he was really fun to work with. So I want to give him a quick shout-out.
Yeah, that's awesome. A former 95.7 The Game fill-in host, and he did weekends for us, too. I love Henry.
I thought so. I thought I had heard him back in the day. Yeah, I've kind of been listening to you guys since you took over for that blasphemous country channel.
Shout-out to Wolf. And Henry with one of the great basso profundo voices of all time, the great deep bass of Henry Wolford.
Oh, 100% agreed. And a terrific family. His wife is incredible. Very, supportive and into all high school sports. So huge shout out to Emmett and Cyrus, who I coach.
Okay. You win the Henry Wolford Wars. I'm all out here. I'm all out of material. Yeah. You got me.
Well, that's probably quite a small battle that I'm fighting, but I will take that 100%. I also want to apologize because I did curse when I was trying to make my point to your screener, and I will do my best to keep it in line here.
Do your best.
The main point I would really like to get to is obviously the whole Aiyuk thing. Diehard Niner fan. I was born in 89, so I have very, very limited memory of our last Super Bowl memory. And I can't help but think that this is kind of our last real chance, like a lot of people do, before we have to shell out a bunch of money to Brock and whoever else. The Niners still to me, hold all the cards, and they truly have from the beginning. It's been kind of outrageous for Ayuk to be making these claims, or, you know, whatever you want to call them, saying that he feels disrespected or whatever it might be, when in reality, I feel that I've only seen one truly productive year from him. I've seen glimpses here and there. And even in last year, you know, he did kind of pull what I like to call the Houdini, which I typically apply to Amari Cooper, which is ironic given that he was considered in trade talks with the other one. But Amari Cooper is known as Houdini in our fantasy league because of how often he disappears. Well, I noticed that a bit with Ayuk, particularly in the games where Brock was not there and we needed him the most. It seemed to shake out that way. My take on the Niners offense and how everything is structured and how everything could go is that Shanahan can probably make most of these, you know, typically average guys or guys that we see in our mind as being average, really top-notch players. For instance, Raheem Mostert and other guys that are just kind of bench warmers. You know, Juwan Jennings played an incredible Super Bowl, but he should not be a starting receiver on most teams. Well, you know what? To me, guess what? I think Shanny could make him into a serviceable kind of 2B receiver who kind of just needs to make a play when he needs to make a play kind of thing. Not a you know, play-by-play, game-changing player. And I think he could do that with almost anybody we bring in, which to me takes all the leverage away from Ayuk, no matter how much the Niners seem to be giving him, which is also really upsetting me.
Thank you for the call. I hate to cut you off, but we are up against it. And that is an idea that many have had, Grandy, that he can turn X player into a great receiver. That is risky.
Dangerous.
Brandon Ayuk is a first-round pick who's played like a first-round talent, and it's not only because he's in Shanahan's offense. And I push back on the one good year. Look at his last 3 years. They've been very consistent, and he's been very solid over 3 years.
Yeah, maybe you could point to, like, a game here and a game there throughout the course of a season, but unless you're Justin Jefferson, I guess even Justin Jefferson's had some not great games, but Tyreek Hill was incredibly consistent this year. And he got hurt a little bit towards the end, and maybe you can poke a little bit of a hole in that. But generally speaking, over the course of a 17-game season, there are very few receivers out there who are going to be incredibly consistent. You're going to have a dud game here or there. But I think the larger point is to look at from season to season what someone has done. It's almost the point that you make all the time about plus minus in basketball, right? Like, over the course of one game, doesn't really mean all that much. But you look at it at a large sample, and you see over the course of a whole season, or over the course of this player's career, they're always in the positive in plus minus. Their team is generally better when they're on the field. It's kind of similar, I think, in this argument. Looking at it from a game-to-game point, okay, yeah, you can find some inconsistencies, but generally speaking, when Ayuk has been playing meaningful and consistent snaps, he's largely been pretty consistent and very important to the offense.
And people look at his postseason numbers in Super Bowl where he had just 3 catches, and a lot of that is the byproduct of your offense, and in this case, of the quarterback. And there were a couple of times in the Super Bowl where he was open and the protection broke down, and so Brock Purdy didn't have a chance to get him the football. And you can't use that as a knock against Ayuk when he wins against his defender and the ball doesn't go his way because the right guard goes the wrong way on a protection, which probably would have won you the Super Bowl.
If anything, it's a plus for Ayuk. He did his job. He got open. Just because the ball doesn't find him is nothing to do with Ayuk. The fact that it didn't find him is more to do with Purdy and the offensive line.
Exactly.
Than Ayuk.
And that's where, you know, you look at targets and catches, and, you know, I was saying this to TJ Houshmandzadeh. If I'm the Niners, I would look at, what, 32nd or 33rd in receptions, and he said, yeah, look at yards per catch or yards per target, and he was number 2 in football in both, and that's where you see a player's real impact. When he does get his number called and the ball goes his way, what does he do with those opportunities? And BA is among the best in the league at that.
Yeah, and I think, like, back to, if you watched Receiver, that doc, and they followed Devontae Adams and his frustration with Jimmy Garoppolo, and Devontae is good enough that even through a season where he was playing with a bad quarterback, he still put up really good numbers. But think about what Devontae Adams' numbers would have been if he had a little bit more capable quarterback getting him the ball. So much of it is outside of the control of the receiver themselves. Devontae Adams gets open, and Jimmy Garoppolo overthrows him. That's a win for Devontae Adams. He did his job. He got open. So much of that is the same for Brandon Ayuk. And that's why I think his impact on the Niners, or his ability to impact games, might be lessened just a little bit because of the team that he does play on, because they have so many weapons to spread the ball around.
And they also don't throw it as often as other teams. They threw it the 32nd most last year in football.
Yeah.
Kyle prefers a balance, and also when you tend to have the lead, and they led in most of the games that they played, when you lead, you're going to run it, especially when you have the best running back in football, so that's going to limit your chances as a receiver to get maximum targets.
Yeah. All right, Dib, that's all we got time for.
That's it?
It's been good being with you this week.
Yeah.
Enjoy your time off.
Thank you, brother.
Early birthday.
I appreciate
that. And we'll see you on Monday, right?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. 3 days off and got lots to do, and then come back on Monday and we can talk more about Brandon Ayuk, Steeler or Niner. Hopefully it gets solved between now and then.
I think he'll be a Niner.
Yeah, I hope it just gets solved between now and then. Yeah, you locked it in.
Lock it in.
I already locked it in that he'd be traded, and then I locked it in that he wouldn't be traded. So
you're a winner either way.
Yeah, I got it covered.
All right, that's all we got time for today. Coming up next on 95.7 The Game is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromise. It's Best of the Game with Lucas Alexander. Coming up first, Brian Baldinger on with the Morning Roast. So hear that conversation right out the gate on Best of the Game. For Dibs, for Lucas, for Carter, my name is Mark Randy. Signing off, thanks so much for tuning in. Mark Willard back tomorrow here on 95.7 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.